Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'd like to start with one basic principle this morning, because Boston makes much of the fact that Cook purchases the component stents from ACS. The AngioTech technology, the subject of this licensing agreement, involves coating stents, not the stents themselves.
Do you make stents?
Does Cook make stents?
Yes.
It does. It has in the past. In fact, Cook manufactured the first stent that was FDA approved. But the fact
And what is the current status of this race between you and Boston and Johnson to get FDA approval?
Well, we're now well back in third place on account of the injunction, Your Honor.
Now, you're completely frozen. What is the status of the 1,000 people who are getting who are in the clinical trials?
Their doctors are observing them and treating them. That much of the matter has not been stated.
So they have these stents installed, your stents?
Yes.
But that's all you're doing.
Right, we're not doing anything.
You're not allowed to.
Right.
Do anything.
Okay.
And have either Boston or Johnson gotten their FDA approval?
Not yet.
Okay, thanks.
And they are, my understanding is, locked in litigation themselves. The fact that these components are purchased from ACS, in fact, everything that happens before the coating itself is really irrelevant to the license agreement. And the patent, AngioTech's patent, makes that perfectly clear. It says stents are maybe readily obtained from commercial sources. And, of course, the Deep South case and all tell us that components are not particularly important.
Forgive me for interrupting, Mr. Levenstam.
That's what I'm here for.
Bottom line here, seems to me that Boston believes you to have waived some of your very best arguments by not having raised them in the district court. Someone in this case, and I hate to use this word, but I don't know what other word to use, is mischaracterizing the contract. According to Boston, you never argued below that your assignment of regulatory responsibilities to ACS is commercially reasonable, that the district court mistakenly rejected 35 U.S.C. 271E in ruling that Cook assigned its regulatory responsibility, and that the AngioTech agreement constitutes an illegal restraint of trade to the extent. I mean, I could just go on, because you read the briefs, too.
Yes.
Help.
Well, my predecessor at the trial court raised the arguments concerning the various rights and obligations that are involved in the underlying contracts. And if you, the argument concerning the antitrust issue is really one of construction, of a construction guide in the event of some ambiguity. But 271E, for instance, is clearly argued in the papers below relevant to the injunction. And, in fact, as we argue here, an injunction of the testing is improper because 271E1 would authorize it in the absence of the license altogether. So I believe that the primary arguments were raised below and are intact, and I do agree with you that there are two very different readings of the AngioTech agreement and of the agreements that are the ACS agreements.
The problem I have with your case is what you did here, it seems to me, you assigned your contract with AngioTech to ACS.
See, I disagree with that respectfully, Your Honor.
They do everything. They do everything except you coat the stents.
Well,
but they sell them. They make the stents. They sell them. You get essentially a royalty. You get a percentage of their sale price. It's an assignment in everything but words.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
You reserve a tiny little function, which is coating the stuff,
Well, the tiny little function actually is making the license.
No, it isn't, because what the license contemplates is that you would coat and sell stents. And in fact, what happens here, ACS makes the stents and sells them and gives you a percentage because you're doing the service for them in coding. And you've got all this phony stuff which irritated Chief Judge Koukouras, and I don't blame him. This sale, buying the stents from them, selling it back to them, that's all baloney. You're not engaged in a purchase and sale of stents. You're engaged in just providing a coating service to ACS, which is the principal here. And they handle the regulatory improvements, and you're just like a subcontractor doing a little piece of the final production.
Well, again, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think that the coating of the stents is the...
But apparently you also, according to these briefs, you didn't want to have discovery. You didn't want to go into the details and what the party's intentions might be. You wanted this case decided just on the basis of the contract. And what you face in the contract is a prohibition against assigning the license to anybody except an affiliate. And ACS is not your affiliate. And I am having a great deal of trouble getting beyond this very simple point that this is a de facto assignment on your part.
What meaning does that provision have under your interpretation of the contract?
The assignment provision?
The granting of the sublicenses, to the affiliates.
Well, the granting provision gives us the right to make the products, and we do make the products. I mean, the fact of the matter is that what you talk about is the simple service of coding is actually changing the product and changing the entire market. It is going
well,
to take
call it what you want. It's a small part of the production process, and what you do is just you're. I mean, this first sale business. You're not selling these stents to ACS in any meaningful sense. They decide on the price. They're not a customer. They're the seller. They're the manufacturer and the seller, and they're giving you a royalty.
Well,
and that's the reality. That just stares at one in the face.
Well, actually, Boston claims that ACS pays you only for the stents it actually sells
to
hospitals. You claim that ACS must pay for all stents
except
the defective ones. Where in the record will we find the best evidence of who is correct on this point?
Well, Section 6.1A of the distribution, the paclitaxel distribution agreement, sets up the sales situation, sets up an index-based price that they must pay. Section 6.4 obligates them to pay in 90 days, regardless of whether they've sold. And Section 4.3 says no return. What they point to as an adjustment in price is, in point of fact, an adjustment based on where a product is sold in the world, because the prices, the indices that are used, are regionally based. So that if ACS purchases with the intention of selling a 100 lot of these products in the United States, and it ultimately sells them in Japan, different indices control. And so that in Japan, perhaps the average price, the average sale price is higher, then at the end of the day, they owe us money. And so there's a truing up of the sale price. But the fact is that Section 6.1A specifically
says... Right,
because
what you get depends on the price at which they sell these stents.
Well, it depends on the price at which all coated stents are sold. These are indices that are published
well,
by territory.
Whatever it depends on, it doesn't depend on anything you do. You don't set the price.
Well, we set the price in negotiating the contract.
Well,
Your Honor.
That price is a royalty, it seems to me.
Well,
They make the marketing decisions.
Well, I respectfully disagree. I mean,
didn't you just state that they're priced differently in different territories?
Yes, the United States, Japan, and the rest of the world are regions that are set up by the distribution agreement as the regions in which the average selling price is going to be determined. That will determine.
Well,
how
if
much
Cook on that on another point, if Cook is restrained from selling it to ACS, does that Antioch agreement prevent them from selling the quoted stents to anyone?
Well, we can't get approval at this point because even our testing has been enjoined. So we're frozen.
You can quote your own stents.
Yes.
Right.
We could.
Yeah.
But as a realistic matter, ACS...
You've lost time.
Yes, there's a great deal of lost time. The fact of the matter is...
Do you think that this Angiotech license assigns any enforceable rights against you to Boston?
It could. The consent... the assignment for consent provision requires the consent of all parties for an assignment. So were there an assignment here, then any party who did not consent arguably would have some recourse. The situation of the regulatory approval is quite different, however, because there our obligations are owed directly to Angiotech, and we in Boston...
Why isn't Angiotech a party? In fact, why isn't ACS a party?
They never sent us a notice of breach. They never joined the action. That, you know, they're reading, perhaps, I don't know, it's outside the record because they're not here.
They just don't care how this student comes.
Well, they're not taking a position between us, I guess.
Let me ask you another question about the contract. There's an arbitration clause.
Yes.
Why wasn't the dispute arbitrated?
There was an agreement between the parties, actually among the parties, at the outset of the dispute to forego the arbitration.
Between Cook and Boston?
Right, and ACS.
And ACS?
Right.
Why is ACS not a party?
Well, there were a series of disputes going on. There was another lawsuit filed.
Why isn't ACS a party? Doesn't it care about its contract with you?
Well, I like to think it does, yeah.
So why aren't they a party?
Because this is a dispute over the... you've probably...
Does the injunction run against ACS?
Well, the injunction runs against the world, basically, so yes, I believe it does.
But they didn't care about becoming a party, even though they're enjoined?
Well, they attempted to intervene in the appeal, and they were denied. Boston opposed. We did not oppose. Boston opposed, and they were denied permission to intervene here. So, I'd like to go back to the sale aspect of this and the sham aspect of this, because this is not a case like DuPont, which was...
But why on earth would you buy stents from them, coat them, and sell them back? Why don't you just do the coating? What business purpose is served by this buy and sell business?
Guidant has, we believe, the best stents, and in particular stent delivery system, which is essential to...
I know that. They have the stents. You want the stents. You want to coat those stents. But why on earth do you just not coat the stents? You make an agreement with them. You'll coat their stents. But they retain the title to them. Why should they give up the title to the stents to you and then take the title back? What purpose is served?
Well, the coated stent is... What purpose? The coated stent is a different product, Your Honor.
Oh, please.
Well, it is. I mean...
Look, if I hire someone to paint my house, I don't sell him... I don't sell him my house and buy it back, right?
No, sure.
I mean, I don't buy my... What sense does that... Is that how people get their houses painted?
No, but...
So what's the difference between that and getting your stent coated?
We have a license.
Of course you do. You have a right to do the coating. but it's ACS's stents. Why should they sell you the stents and then have you sell them back?
Because I guess title
passes. In other words, if someone wants his house painted, he doesn't sell the house to the painter, and then after the house is painted, buy it back on the theory that a painted house is a different product from an unpainted house. And that's exactly what you've done. And I'd like to know what the point is.
When you sell, title shifts and.
Well, would you answer my question? What's the difference between this case and my hypothetical of a painted house?
We have a license right.
Of course. The painter has a right to paint the house, right?
Yes.
You can't force someone to paint your house. You have to hire him. And yet you don't sell your house to the painter on the theory that he has a right to do the painting.
No.
And then buy the house back after he's painted it. And that's exactly what you've done.
Well, we set up this transaction in a fashion that we believe would protect both.
You haven't explained to me why it's important to the protection of your property rights if you buy the stents and then resell them.
Is there some reason why you have to have ownership? That's what he's asking you.
Well,
title
and risk of loss and those things pass. And so during the period of time while those stents are in our possession, we bear that risk. I mean, we hold the title and we bear that risk.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Levin. Mr. Gansfried?
May it please the court. I'd like to start with two points that came up in questions. One, as to Section 271E, that was not raised below by Cook until after liability had been determined in the summary judgment proceedings. It was raised in the injunction, but it was not raised as a defense on the merits. And I understood the answer earlier to be consistent with that, namely that it was raised in with regard to the injunction, but it was not raised below on liability until that had been determined. As to the point about AngioTech not taking a position, Cook is the plaintiff in this case. It sought a declaration of its rights under the AngioTech agreement, and it didn't bring AngioTech into the suit. And it resisted mightily and successfully any discovery of AngioTech. AngioTech is a Canadian company. It had agreed, pursuant to a process, to appear for deposition and to produce documents. Date was set for the deposition. Cook went into court and had that and virtually all other discovery in the case blocked. There was an exchange of documents as between the parties. But as with respect to AngioTech and ACNS, there was no discovery. And that was as a result of Cook's strategy in the district court. Cook's successful strategy to block all discovery. And that's why, in response to Cook's motion for summary judgment, Boston Scientific did put in a Rule 56F affidavit, indicated the discovery that we wanted to take in response to their motion. They did no such thing in response to our motion for summary judgment.
Can Boston sell all the stents to a major hospital, which then uses some and sells others to other hospitals?
The contract would not allow either of the parties that has an exclusive right to sell and distribute to do anything that would breach the other party's exclusive right to sell. So an arrangement of sale for resale by someone else, other than an affiliate or other than any approved sublicensing arrangement, would be a violation of the contract.
What is it in the AngioTech agreement that prevents Cook from making all of its sales to one party?
It can make all of its sales to one party, so long as the sales are not a distribution arrangement with that one third party. being a distributor. And there's no doubt that it's a distributor because the language of the ACS agreement says explicitly ACS is a distributor.
What about Mr. Rovner's question about the returns? Mr. Levenstam said that there are no returns.
Well, under Section 6.1 of the ACS agreement, one of the agreements, it's in the appendix of pages 170 and 171. It says that there is an adjustment made at the conclusion, I think it's of a quarter, with respect to any stents that are not sold where ACS had originally anticipated that they be sold. How that would operate in practice, of course, we haven't taken discovery as to that. But it is clear, and I think this is important, that Section 2.3 of that same agreement says that Cook shall not retain the right to sell products to anyone, anywhere in the world, other than ACS.
If Cook and ACS created a joint venture to do exactly what they did here with the five contracts, would Cook be in breach of the AngioTech agreement?
It might be. It would depend on whether the joint venture was structured in a way that would still allow Cook to fulfill its obligations and to be in compliance, namely exercising control over the activities and decisions of the joint venture, and so long as it was Cook or an entity that was accurately and appropriately designated an affiliate.
Uh-huh.
And with the appropriate permissions and consent. So it's theoretically possible. Uh-huh. Clearly it's not what they did.
Well, Cook claims you use independent distributors outside the United States. Is that the case?
We do not for any of the products involved in the AngioTech licensing agreement. Not in the United States and not elsewhere.
What is the rationale for the no assignment clause? What's the purpose?
It's a tripartite arrangement where we have an exclusive right to sell and distribute, as does Cook. And as part of an assurance that that process will allow us to get the benefit of the bargain that we bargained for, and having made the enormous investment in these products.
But is it because if Cook or you could assign your contract to a larger firm, it would hurt you? Is that the idea?
It's because you enter into an agreement with some expectation of who the players are.
So basically, there's a race between you and Cook. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out what is at stake here. There's a race between you and Cook for FDA approval. And is your concern that with ACS, which is a much larger company, behind Cook at Athene, de facto Athene, that gives them a leg up? Is that the concern?
There are multiple concerns. One is that...
Is that the major concern?
Well, let me not calibrate them, but there are several. One is if Cook can take a contract that says there are two exclusive sellers and distributors, and say, well, two, let's make it three. It not only breaches the contract, it violates the laws of mathematics. Two does not equal three. But if they can do three, they can do four. They can do five. They can do six. And the investment that Boston Scientific has made, which to date in the record reflects in the neighborhood of $150 million in developing and working on this product, in the expectation and under an agreement that there are two co-exclusive distributors and sellers, each of whose rights are subject to the other one's rights, then it would be contrary to the investment expectation that Boston Scientific would have in going into it. Cook has given no explanation under the AngioTech agreement as do I, if they could add, make, go from two distributors and sellers to three, they couldn't go to four, five, and on up.
So is there any real public health issue here? Are there people who may drop dead because of what is going on here in this courtroom in Chicago?
No.
I've taken your breath away.
No. there was a public health argument that was made principally below that by stopping the clinical trial of the Cook ACS product, that the patients who were in that trial would be stranded, and that for the clinical and medical purposes is carved out of the injunction. It can't be used for commercial purposes, but I think this came up in response to questions earlier.
Yes, but I think the larger question is that the injunction stops Cook from obtaining FDA approval of the product, the AC, it's really the ACS product, I agree with that, but anyway, it may be a good product, and it's either not going to be allowed to be sold or there's going to be a big delay. One specific question about that: why should the injunction not just prevent the sale of the competing product? Why should it prevent the obtaining of the FDA approval?
Well, because Cook also violated the provision of the contract that said that all responsibility for obtaining regulatory approval resided with
Cook. I understand they violated it, but from a public health standpoint, why would one want to enjoin just the sort of development phase? You're not hurt by their obtaining approval. You're only hurt if they start to sell the product.
Well,
until then, I mean, the FDA approval process might cast light on, you know, what's the best technology.
Well, the record does reflect that there is injury from to Boston Scientific from that process proceeding. One, if it turns out that the Cook ACS product, had it continued, was in some way inferior or was not sufficiently effective or safe. As a paclitaxel-coated stent, it would pose a problem with respect to the sale of anyone else's paclitaxel-coated stents, namely Boston Scientific.
That's not an issue
in this court today. That's your next case.
It's very unattractive because you're suggesting that you want to suppress information that might emerge in the FDA process that paclitaxel is dangerous. That would be valuable information for the community to know.
The tests have not been enjoined. They have not been enjoined. They have only been enjoined for any commercial use.
The injunction prevented them from getting FDA approval.
Mm-hmm. For the ACS product,
right.
Not for a Cook product,
no,
not for the Cook stents, not
but
for the product.
They abandoned their product.
Only in the United States, not elsewhere. Only in the United States. They're continuing elsewhere. So the prospect, as this case exists in the district court, was that outside the United States, there would be three sellers and distributors of three different stent products.
So we'll all have to go to Canada?
Boston Scientific paclitaxel coated stents are in the FDA process, and the hope and expectation is that they will satisfy that process and be approved, and that will happen in the short run. So that the hypothetical that you raise, I think, will not come to pass.
Mr. Ganstreet, if I don't get this question out, your time is coming to an end. You had a confidentiality agreement that required you to return inadvertently produced privileged documents. 40 pages were stamped privileged.
Well, it was about 42 documents. It was about 100, 150 pages.
Okay, 40 documents. Whatever it adds up to about a quarter of 1%, or maybe a half of 1% then of the production. It just seems so unduly harsh to call that gross negligence. Can you think of any other case where we upheld a result like that with such a small percentage of inadvertently disclosed state documents, and why won't you give it back to them?
Well, let me start at the end of that question. We did. The documents that, of the 42, the 38 or so that were not referred to in the summary judgment, they've been returned. As to the other four, they've also been returned, but they do reside in the records in the papers that were submitted below. I think the key here is twofold, to look at the circumstances. 2 weeks after the production was made, counsel for Cook, in a hearing before the magistrate judge, Nolan, this is record item 41, is the transcript of that, when there was discussion about getting a privilege log, counsel for Cook said there's no need for a privilege log because there were no privileged documents that had been withheld from the production. This was 2 weeks after they made the production. And as a result, there was no privilege log at that time. It was 8 weeks later, after the documents were referred to in the summary judgment papers, that they came to court and described a process where there were documents and had been and they had been removed and they had flags on them and so forth. But when we were in the process of reviewing them, we had the representation that had been made not only to counsel but to the court that there were no privileged documents that had been withheld. And that seemed clearly to be the case because there were documents that reflected the fact that Cook had shared its legal analysis of the AngioTech agreement, which is what these documents refer to, with Guidant and ACS.
Why do you care about giving them back or keeping them?
Well, as I said, we have.
So what is the issue then?
Frankly, I'm not sure. It's an appeal from a summary judgment in which Judge Kokoris clearly said that the documents about which there's this issue was raised played no role in his determination. It seems to me that the way it was briefed is principally with respect to Cook's suggestion that in the event that there are further proceedings in the case.
But I
don't understand it to be raised as any issue with respect to the summary judgment. And let me get back to that basic point. The case is here on a grant of summary judgment in a diversity case decided under state law. There has been no argument about any misstatement of Washington state law by the district judge. And there is no argument that there are fact issues that remain to be resolved. Nor could there be, because Cook's position has consistently been limit discovery, keep discovery of third parties out of the case. There are no fact issues. The contract is unambiguous. And I think it's quite clear, you look at the provisions of the AngioTech agreement, sections 2.1, 6.2, and 11.7, and then look at the relevant provisions of the AngioTech agreements, you know, by coincidence also 2.1 in that one, but also 2.3 and 5.5 and 5.6, that it's quite clear that obligations that Cook undertook in the AngioTech agreement with a no assignment provision and with any right that Cook has is subject to Boston Scientific's exclusive rights to make, use, sell, and distribute.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gans, for your time has expired. Mr. Levenstam, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like for rebuttal.
I'd like to start with the issue of the injunction on the testing. and section 271E1.
So the documents, does that have any significance?
Well, I'm sorry, which document?
The last issue that Mr. Gansfried was talking about, the documents.
Yes, and clearly, if there is a remand, we don't want those documents. Those documents are privileged.
So that's the only issue.
Yes, it's a, yes.
Yeah, it's just a contingent on our reversing.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, fine.
But with respect to 271E1, and the testing,
let's see how 271E can be a defense to a contract suit.
Well,
be a defense to infringement suit. How can it override a contract?
Because the only reason, the only basis they have for stopping us is the underlying rights in the patent.
No, they have a contract.
Right, but it's a license agreement, and they're enforced.
Who cares? You can make a contract with respect to a patent rights, and that contract is enforceable under state law. It's not overridden by 271E has a very specific purpose to allow, you know, experimental uses without there being infringement. But if you enter into a contract and you give up that right,
well, I don't believe we did.
The end of it.
I don't believe we did give up that right, Your Honor. I mean, that's the point.
It's a question of the meaning of the contract.
Right, and we
the meaning
remain
of the license, not a question about 271.
But we remain responsible to AngioTech for our progress on that. We can lose our license entirely if we're not permitted to proceed. And those tests are very important for us to be able to use. Even if we cannot go forward with an ACF deal in terms of getting ultimate approval from the FDA for our own product. I mean, that all that testing has been done and it has been submitted, and like Boston, Cooks, you know, has invested millions of dollars in this transaction. And if we're going to move forward on any basis and get a product to the market, it is essential that we...
So you're really arguing the policy of 271E should influence the scope of the injunction? Is that the
test?
I see. So it's not about the contract.
Okay. Well, it is both that and the fact that we should not be stopped quite apart from the contract. We have a right independent under 271E to proceed with the testing. One further point on the contract, and that is the subject to language. A normal exclusive licensee has the right to exclude people from doing anything that falls within the license scope. When you have co-exclusive licensees and their rights are subject to each other, that means that each has to abide by the fact that the other can exercise those rights. So interpreting that contract to allow Boston to stop Cook from selling its product is really standing the subject to language on its head. What it says is Boston can't stop us from making, selling, doing all the things that we're distributing.
Boston can stop you from assigning, can it?
Right, but there was no
assignment. Well, then that's the question, whether this is really an assignment with some evasive sale language.
Right. So, and we respectfully submit that if you look at the documents, it was not evasive sale language. There are legitimate sales. And
are these co-exclusive licenses a common phenomenon in the R&D world?
I'm not familiar with them. I'm familiar with exclusive licenses and non-exclusive licenses. I can't really answer your question, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Leventhal. Thank you to both counsel.